It's easy to lose your bearings when someone you care about is dying. Even if you've been tremendously close, a great divide opens with you on one side, in the kingdom of the well, and your loved one on the other, in the kingdom of the sick, the night side of life. Roles blur as a friend or parent or lover becomes sicker and disappears into the startling and unfamiliar identity of the dying one. Days filled with physical care and decisions that can't ultimately save this precious life. And we, who are well, look for guidance about what to say and how best to help. We're scared, anxious, and grieving, and we're desperate to offer support. But very often, we retreat emotionally. Even in the midst of busily working for a good death, because it's so hard to stay present through the pain. We often know what to do, what tasks we need to perform, but we no longer know how to be. I've watched this happen repeatedly in the 4 decades I've worked with dying people and their families, and I experienced it myself when caring for my father, mother, and best friend after they were diagnosed with terminal conditions. No matter how prepared we believe we are, I think most of us feel blindsided by what's asked of us as we try to comfort our loved ones and struggle to find the skill and grace that will help us reduce their pain. This book will show you how to sustain emotional closeness when death enters the picture and help you nourish your relationship with the other person in ways that will allow your connection to deepen until the very end. In doing that, you'll find that you can bear the pain of your losses together and experience peace, even fulfillment, that you never could have had without each other. In the chapters to come, I'll ask you to make a series of simple commitments about how you'll choose to be when you're with your loved one. These promises need never be spoken, but you can feel, understand, and act on them in ways that will help you stay focused and present. Each one will help you orient yourself, stay grounded, and keep offering meaningful support and compassion, even when you feel upset, confused, or lost. I've used these essential guidelines to accompany hundreds of people through their dying time and to train many thousands of volunteers to do the same. They've helped countless people find a path to peace in the midst of turmoil. I began developing these guidelines in the 1970s as a psychologist at the Cancer Research Institute, CRI, which is part of the University of California Medical Center in San Francisco. There, in the days before there was a hospice movement in the United States, I was the sole staff member assigned to focus on the non-physical needs of patients dying of cancer, their emotions, their spirits. I was particularly struck by the loneliness that was so much a part of life on the cancer ward. As people got sicker, their friends and families often stopped visiting, sometimes scared off by the symptoms or their own sadness, sometimes seeming to think that there was nothing they could do, so why visit at all? The few who came were likely to dance around the issue of death and would leave without it ever really asking the person in bed what he or she was thinking or feeling. So much comes up emotionally and spiritually for people as their time runs short. They review their lives, forgive, and ask forgiveness, and cycle through a wide spectrum of feelings in which they confront anger, sadness, fear, regret, joy, love, and the unanswerable question of what comes next. I realized that more than anything I could do as a professional, simply accompanying someone through that challenging, emotional, and spiritual vortex, human to human, had the most profound impact. So I sat at bedsides, listening, talking, and witnessing the struggles, hopes, and stories of people who were about to die. In my years of doing that, I learned what helped them. What actions and attitudes made the biggest difference?